I'll just. Hey, welcome again to the Sunday Night There Is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. This meeting is being recorded, so you may visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The link will be posted in the chat. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered to the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. And I'm delighted to welcome Kaya P., a compulsive overeater from, I think, Colorado, but please keep me honest, Kaya. That's accurate.
It's a complicated issue right now. So yes, at the moment I'm in Colorado.
Okay. All
Thank
right.
you. All righty. Hi, everybody. My name is Chaya P. I'm a very grateful recovered for today. Compulsive overeater, bulimic, restrictor, and anorexic. I got to add that to my repertoire. And I'm just so grateful to be here. I'm grateful. In a day, Sundays can be a little like, where am I on Sunday? And especially just in terms of my life right now and how I'm in living in different places and we're going to be moving and all sorts of things going on. To have this on my calendar today was so great. Like I knew I had a meeting this morning and I was going to work with a sponsee and I knew I had this meeting now. And I'm just so grateful. It like bookended my day. And and all that happened in between is really a testament to this program. Before I begin, like sharing, hopefully some experience, strength, and hope. We'll see what my higher power decides to flow through me. I'm just going to ask to be a vessel. I just want to really welcome anyone who's new. Like you are the lifeblood of this program. You help us more than you even know, and we're just so glad that you're here. It's also a testament to the fact that it's not working so well out there, right? That we keep getting new people. So I really want to welcome you. I hope that you'll stay. I hope you'll go to lots of meetings, and get what we say in the middle of the herd, so that you can really get a feel for what this program is and the miracles that are awaiting you. And I also want to welcome anyone who's maybe coming back to OA, or maybe you've been in the rooms, but you haven't yet felt that you've gotten recovery. Maybe you're going in and out. Maybe you keep finding yourself back in the food. Like there really is hope, and hopefully I'll share some of that today. So I really want to thank you for being here. I'm going to share some pictures just to kind of show you like what the craziness of this disease could look like. So I'm going to show you like what I was when I was I think I was like seven. I don't know the exact ages of these young pictures, but I think the one I'm going to share. Hold on. So bad at sharing my screen. I teach this course and I'm always like, oh my God. Okay. I teach a course where I have to share my screen and it gets really wacky. Okay. Can you guys see that? You see? Yeah. Do
We see
you
a
see?
WhatsApp
Oh,
kind of
you don't see
chat.
that screen. Okay. So hold on a second. Let me stop sharing the screen. I thought I was sharing the one that I wanted to share. So just give me a second. Share this. Share. Do you see pictures now?
Yes.
You see pictures. Okay. You could also see all the tabs on the top. So that's my brain. You could just see how many things are going on in my brain right now. Okay. So this picture with my little green dress, I think I'm older than I am in the purple dress. And I remember the morning it was school pictures. I think I was maybe seven or eight. And I remember this very clearly. But these little young pictures here, so this little one here, maybe I'm four. And then here, maybe I'm like eight. And then here, I'm probably like 11. Okay. This 11-year-old was told she should be on a diet. You have such a pretty face if you only lose weight. This was me in college where I was thoroughly bulimic because you have to be thin. But if you're up and down or you look like this, you know, this is what set what it set what kind of what like with what life was like for me. This was in college also. I played Rizzo in Greece, my claim to fame when we do fun facts at our Shabbat table. I played Rizzo in Grease, and then about the summer after that, I looked like that because I went on a diet all summer. I lived at the gym. I don't know if I was actively bulimic during that time, but I was extremely thin and not really well nourished, but I was repelling. And at this thing where I was repelling, I was on an kind of like an outward bound thing with my, I was an RA, a resident assistant at my college. And I went on this trip and I raided the cookies that night at the camping site because I just couldn't, keep that up. And then when we started college, I couldn't keep up what I had done to be in this body, repelling when I went back to school because I lived at the gym and I was just at the gym all the time. And if you wanted to see me, you had to meet me at the gym. That was just the way it was. And so when I went back to college, I was losing control and I was trying to have the nurse weigh me. And I was trying to, anyway, by the end of that year, I look like this. This is probably my highest weight. So that summer, I looked like this rappelling girl. And in December, I had to be at my stepsister's wedding. And this is what I looked like at the wedding, which is not bad, but I was like considerably sizes higher. And then this is that May, that following May, me graduating with my two grandmothers of blessed memory. And this is really, I had already started to get into program at this time, but this is about the heaviest I'd gotten. And then this is then many, many years later, five children and all sorts of things. This is a, I don't know, I think this is like 2020. This is before COVID. It's me and my husband at the gym, just living in a healthy body. This was my daughter's wedding a few years, July, almost 3 years ago, where I was actually in a malnourished state, but I didn't really realize it. But that ended up me looking like this. I'm the girl on the left. This is in program. I look like a cancer patient. And I thought my friend on the right, I thought I was heavier than her. That's how crazy the disease. And now I look like this. Ah, that's me. That's me. So I'm going to stop sharing now. So you could just see what this disease, where it can take you. And for me, even in the rooms, because I personally had a lot of developmental trauma. And although I did a lot of therapy along the way, there was, I needed to get some really, 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 really good outside help to stop cycling back. I had to do that trauma work that we only now today really have really, really, really good ways of getting to that. And today I don't have that. I'm not carrying that anymore. And my program and my outside work are partners with each other. That's just part of my story. So see, I was a little chubby when I was little. Lots of trauma that happened. My father died when I was a baby. It was just like, it's not even worth going through. There's just a lot. And you're being fed and you're also told to be thin. Now, I want to be very clear. That is not why I have this disease. I do not have this disease because I was pressured to be thin or because my father died or because I had some trauma. That is not why I have it. I believe today, just like the big book talks about, we're born that way. I'm bodily and mentally different from my fellows. That's it. I call it spiritual type 1 diabetes. If you've heard me share this, I'm sorry. I share it ad nauseum, but it is the best way for me to explain how I see this disease for me. Type 1 diabetes, you did not do anything to get it. You're born that way. Some people are diagnosed when they're 4 years old. I had a client who was diagnosed, he had since he's four. Some people, it doesn't show up until they're later in life, but there's nothing they did that made them diabetic. That is just the way it is. You're talking about type two is lifestyle and weight and sleep and all other things that you can control. Type one, you need insulin, period. Your pancreas doesn't make it, you need it. That is to me how this disease is. It's all those, now all those, for somebody who has type one, if you have a bad lifestyle and you're overweight and you don't get enough rest and you have blah, 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 it can exacerbate your type one diabetes, but it's not why you have type one diabetes. Right. So I have this because I have this. This is just, this is how God made me. And lots of circumstances made me need to go seek comfort in food. And boy, did I get comfort in food for a long time. And then stop getting comfort in it, but the thought of it brings you comfort. That's like the craziness is like the thought can bring it, and then when you're in it, it's not comfortable anymore. So I did a lot of the yo-yo dieting as a young person. I found Overeaters Anonymous, After, this was not, I was not looking for, I came through the back door. I had a boyfriend who I thought was alcoholic. They sent me to Al-Anon. And then I ended up in an AA meeting, which freaked me out, which I ended up becoming a member of shortly after that. And I ended up going to Overeaters Anonymous at a certain point. I ran out of the meeting because they talked about God. I have three things that I want to talk about tonight. So one of them is that. So I just want to say, like, I share all the time. I ran out of my first meeting because they talked about God. I was not seeking a relationship with God. I was this Jewish girl from Brooklyn. I did not grow up religious. God was not part of our conversation in the house. It was weird to me because the only people I knew were my Catholic friends. They had him on the wall. That was what I knew about God. So I ran out of my first meeting, but I was desperate. And they said, which is what I'm going to read here, in We Agnostics in our big book. This is the big book, which is the Alcoholics Anonymous book, which is our Working with Others book. So my book, this book is for to me to work with others. Someone worked with me, and I got to mark it up, and now I work with others with it. And on in We Agnostics, it talks about lack of power. Lack of power for me is I can't guarantee with certainty that if I pick up a certain substance, my alcoholic food or food behaviors, that I will be able to stop. I cannot guarantee that. My husband can guarantee if he decides he's having two of something, he can overeat them too if he lets himself go. But if he says I'm having two and only two and that's all I'm having, 100% of the time he can have two. That is not the case for me. He could say, I'm gonna have two today and I'm not having them again for a month. I can't guarantee that. Okay, that's powerless. And then when I don't have it, I can't guarantee you that I won't do it again. That's powerless. Right? Like that's powerlessness. So it says this here. That's the problem here. That's the dilemma. We have a lack of power. And we had to find a power greater than ourselves, which by which we could live, because this is not a way to live. And it had to be a power greater than ourselves because, after all, like humans, we just are fallible. Obviously, it says, but where and how do we find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. So that's the whole point of this book and of these meetings is to help you find a power greater than yourself that can restore your sanity. But it's going to go down the page and tell us, like, oh, some of you may be worried about this and you have your old conceptions of it or blah, blah, blah. And it says, don't worry about it. Just be willing to believe that there's possibility of a power greater than you. And don't worry about it. It doesn't have to be anybody's conception. It can be your own, however limited that is, to begin. And the agenda is not to have a specific that you should follow a specific dogma. It's wide open and it grows and it did for me. And I'm just so grateful for that. I began by talking out loud. They said, they say you're there. I don't know if you're there. I used to talk no Bluetooth. This is like 38 years ago. No Bluetooth, no, nothing like that. If you, no cell phones even. So if you were talking in your car and nobody was sitting in the car with you and you were alone, you looked a little odd. Now they're talking on their speaker or their Bluetooth. But then, and I just started talking, and eventually it started to feel like I wasn't talking to nothing. Like maybe there was something, and I worked these steps, and that introduced me to a power greater than myself. And I'm very, very grateful that that has developed over time tremendously. And but there's no have to in terms of, but I'm gonna read another part of the book, which is one of my favorite things, which I'm gonna go back to my type 1 diabetes analogy, which is for someone who has diabetes, type 1 diabetes, they must have insulin. A lot of them walk around with insulin pumps, right? They have to have insulin. I need spiritual insulin. The spiritual insulin, as I understand it from the 12-step program, is step 12, which hopefully I'm doing a little bit of right now, which is trying to carry the message to others and practice the principles in my affairs, which is why I had to make amends to somebody today and I did a 10 step, because I have to stay clear, the channel clear in steps 10 and 11 so that I can do 12. But you can't do 10 and 11 and 12 if you don't do 1 through 9. So steps 1 through 9, there are 12 doses to this medication, this spiritual insulin, for me. I'm just telling you, this is a metaphor that works for me. The first 9 doses, you take those doses. The 10th and 11th are repetitive doses. 10 as necessary, which is usually daily. 11 on a daily basis, so that I'm able to do 12, which is a necessary ongoing form of treatment. And that metaphor has really helped me to just understand this disease. So I want to just now skip to Dr. Bob's nightmare, which is right after the first 164 pages of our book, which teaches us what we do here, what the program is. He was the co-founder. I'm looking at the time. Is that how much time I've left, or that's how much time has gone? No, that's how much time has gone. I've spoken for 15 minutes already.
You have 15 minutes left.
I have 15 minutes left. Okay, good. God, I'm so glad. I thought I had 5 minutes left. Okay. So Dr. Bob was the co-founder. He was a doctor. And he says, I spend a great deal of time passing on what I learned to others who want and need it badly. Want it badly too. You can't just need it badly. A lot of people need it badly. You have to really want it badly, really want it, and then do it badly. You have to do it like you want it badly. That's my experience. I had to do this like I needed and wanted it badly. I do this for 4 reasons. 1, a sense of duty. Because I have to give, it says early in our book, I was just reading the doctor's opinion with a sponsee this morning. It says and that he would pass this on to others, okay? Number 2, it is a pleasure. It really is. Like, really, it is a pleasure to be able to watch somebody blossom. How cool is that? 3, because in so doing, here's the selfish part. Well, not yet. Because this is the part of paying back. In so doing, I am paying my debt to the person who took time to pass it on to me. My sponsor said to me, and I say to my sponsees, the conditions of me working with you is that you will then pass this on. And then I can give your phone number out to a newcomer, right? That's condition, because that's the conditions I worked under. And that's what the conditions of the 12 steps is telling us here. And then 4, because here's the selfish one, because every time I do it, I take out a little more insurance for myself against a possible slip, because this is the medicine. So I'm very passionate about working with others and passing this on. And really trying to stay clear in 10, 11, and 12. I just want to look at my notes. What did I write? Agnostic, Dr. Bob's 12-step insulin. Okay. And then I want to talk about the outside help piece. So I've been in these rooms just like, I'll tell you, like I'm 58. I know I don't look 58, but I'm 58. And I'm a grandmother. I know I don't look like a grandmother, but I have the cutest little 2-year-old grandson and a little granddaughter on the way, please God, soon. And I've been in this program since I'm about 18 or 19 years old. Like, I started coming into the rooms around then. And I'm so grateful, because it gave me like a way to live, you know, and a way to connect with. I'm so grateful that I found a relationship with God in this program. I'm so grateful. And I did what the big book did. That says eventually I just went to my own backyard and I went back to my religion that I was born with, which is completely in line with program. Like, there's no problem. It's amazing. And I am just so grateful. But I had a lot of recovery but I also, kept going back to certain behaviors in my, like some of those restricting behaviors or just like, really more like restricting behaviors or just like compulsive around food. Even if I necessarily wasn't eating my alcoholic foods. And I really didn't. And the last thing that happened when I showed you, when I got like super, super thin, it was not on purpose. I had a physical issue. I went on a plan to try to help that issue. It remedied the issue, but I lost a lot of weight. So imagine me like 20 pounds less than I am right now. Like, it was not good. But I didn't see it. And people were very worried about me. And I was like, I have a nutritionist. I dumped my nutritionist and I found a nutrition coach who would sign on to my way. And then what happened was, And in these rooms, there are compulsive eaters, there are bulimics, there are anorexics, there are restrictors. There's people like me that have all layers of the disease, you know, and there's just there's every shape. And so just if you don't identify with me, if I don't relate to me, trust me, there's someone in OA who you'll relate to. I promise you, just please keep coming and listen to other meetings. But for me, what happened was, I ended up, we can hide behind thin in this program. Thin is not well. And I got not only I got too thin, but then when I had to gain weight because I got diagnosed with osteoporosis, it brought up every bit of childhood trauma that I had that I had nicely kept at bay while I was raising my kids, thank God. So I didn't like screw my kids too much. They have, as we say in our family, they have just the right amount of trauma, just enough so that they could be resilient, but not enough that they could really, thank God, they're really amazing, amazing, amazing kids. And they all have their stuff in because life is lifey. But I'm just so grateful. And I'm grateful that what I had to go through over the last 5 years, I went through, and it was already after basically my kids were out of the house. But I could not get out of it. Nothing was helping me get out of it. I was going to therapy, nothing until a form of therapy that really changed my life and helped me tremendously. And I get to do it in my profession, which is amazing too. So I get to pass that on as well. But I needed that outside help. And I just want to say that there are a lot of people in the rooms that are trying to get from the 12 steps that which the 12 steps cannot give. The 12 steps are not designed to process trauma out of your brain and body. They're just not what they're designed to do, but they will lead you to what, I said this years ago. The 12 steps will not always give me the answer for every life problem, but they will lead me to an answer for what I need. And the big book is clear about getting outside help and making use of those. And so I have a sponsee right now who she's on now, she's on step nine, eight, and nine. But I said to her early on when she started telling me our story, I was like, can I just tell you straight up, please go get some outside help because otherwise you're going to find yourself circling around in this program. You'll get it, you'll have it for a little while, then you'll end up going back. I know it. I saw me, this is what happened to me. So I'm very, 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 very grateful that I'm not walking around with that stuff anymore. But guess what? So all the trauma was gone. And guess what? Then I was like, oh, I still have this. Because guess what? You could do all the trauma work in the world that is not going to get rid of your type 1 diabetes. Okay? It may help you not have spikes, but it doesn't take it away. And just like that, that metaphor is for me with this. And so I need this program. And so I went through the steps again, without carrying all that stuff. And it was just such a completely different experience. But I'm very, very clear that I am not immune from this, that I have type 1 spiritual diabetes, and it comes in the form of, for me, this around food. And I'm also sober. It's just part of my OA program as well. And I have to take these doses of steps 10, 11, and 12 on a daily basis. And I've been living, just like to say what like life is like. We're in the middle, all our kids live on the East Coast now, and we have another grandchild that we're expecting, and we have elderly parents that are on the, thank God they're mostly doing well, but like, late 80s and mid 80s, and it's time for us to go there, be there on our way. We're trying to also make some time so we can live in Israel part of the year, and like kind of go back and forth while our parents are still alive. They should live and be well for a long time. But so I've been like traveling a lot, and we're in the middle of moving. So I'm moving in a month. I just got back on Thursday after being on the East Coast for a month, and I was helping with my grandson. And then I'm back here for a month, and I'm preparing for Passover, and most of my kids are coming. And then 2 days after Passover, I'm going back and I'm moving. And then my husband's coming like a couple of weeks later. We're in the middle of moving, changing our house. I mean, selling our house, renting something, trying to sell our house, I should say, renting something. Then my daughter, these are all amazing good things. Then my daughter, my 23-year-old, just got engaged. So we're planning a wedding. And it's complicated. His parents are divorced. And it was supposed to be in Israel, but then the grandparents can't come. So now we're changing it to New York. And it's just like, this is what my, and I work. I have a very thriving, thank God, practice and teaching courses. And it's good. It's really good. And the most important thing for me is that when I wake up in the morning, I thank God for another day, and I spend 30 minutes in prayer meditation, and I get on a Vision for You meeting so I can hear the message. And then I speak with my sponsees, not every single day when they're doing the work. I'm always having a sponsee that's in the first like four steps. So as soon as somebody finishes step five, I'm looking for a new one because I never want to be out of those first three steps to keep it really real, real and raw. So that I can always, it could be very clear in the forefront of my brain. I'm going to let you, I have 5 more minutes. Wow, this is so, is this like a 30 minute speech talk? So much better than 20 minutes. 20 minutes is so hard. 30, I just feel like we could just all take a breath for a moment. Let's see what I need, what needs to be shared in the next 5 minutes. So, so what I thought I was going to say fell out of my head. And I will share that. I want to share that step 10 is also so important. Step 10 is steps 1 through 9, basically, all mushed into one. And step 10 is when, as I'll pause when agitated or doubtful, ask for the right, that's step 11. I ask for the right thought or action. I have to do that. But step 10 is to continue to take personal inventory and make amends, promptly admit it. If I make and make amends and promptly admit that I made the pro you know made it and make the amend. I can't think of it exactly verbatim at the moment. So I brought up making sure that we're giving enough charity money to my husband last night while he was looking at the wedding spreadsheet and asked me to please move money from my business because we were low running low on our checking account. Not the best time to say, because my spiritual self goes, we just need to make sure we're giving enough charity if we want to have enough money for that wedding. Ugh, I sound like a put a little bun in my head and I just sounded so today I said to him, you know what, you're carrying so many things and so much right now. I'm sorry, that was bad timing. It was bad timing. It was bad timing. And I, got a little pleasure from speaking a little, if you want to call it what it was gossip. And the gossip wasn't the bad part because it wasn't like it was that I got a little pleasure from it. Ugh, I don't like that part of me. But guess what? I can clean that up, and say, I'm sorry I polluted the conversation, And I love that we have the 10 step. Or my mother added four of her friends to the guest list without asking me. She just added them to the guest list and I got like little about it. And then I thought to myself, oh, I'm so glad she added them. Thanks, Mom. Like, really, I am glad. Like, I should have added them. They should have been invited from the start. Just to have that pause in between rather than reacting. And I think that 10 step has been very helpful and the outside help because I could do all the 10 steps in the world and I was still going to repeat behaviors. Thanks to and 10 and step 11 has been really important for me. I actually created my own form of meditation that worked for me. I used to do this other meditation and I could never really like get a hold of it. And I created my own. And now I get to teach it actually to people, which is really cool. But I created my own that works. So I meditate for 18 minutes every morning, almost every morning, not always, but for the most part. And I try to do two-way writing, two-way, writing to God, letting God write through me. Not that God's writing to me, but trying to channel. That be a channel, to clear my vessel so that I can hear the wisdom. It says in the book, it says, our thought life will go become on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. And we try to align my thinking. How would God have me be if I wanted to act? Like, how would it be? So I'm just really grateful to be here. I'm so grateful to have this. And I'll say one other piece is sometimes my food, like there'll be little where it feels a little off in some way. I do weigh and measure my food almost all the time, like if I'm home in my house, for sure. I've been away a lot, and so sometimes like I really can weigh my food at my daughter's house, so part of me doesn't want to. Some of me, and it's just like I'm so quiet when I just have my food nicely, and it's like ugh, I could just do the rest of my life. I don't have to think about it. I enjoy my food. It's not like I'm not like, it's not like I can't enjoy what have you, but the food needs to be in its place. And so I didn't really talk about food. Isn't that amazing for anybody who's new? I didn't really talk about food because that is not the issue. Once we Once we get that in its place in step one, it's like an alcohol, an AA. You just stop. You cannot drink alcohol. It's very clear. So here we have to figure out what that is for us. Everybody's different. There are a few things that tend to be common, but for the most part, it's very important. And I have my sponsees go to a dietitian, and I have one that I recommend. I've seen a lot of them that are, and I have one that I really think a few that are good that know understand the illness and understand what we're dealing with here. But my plan of eating, my food plan is not my abstinence. My abstinence is what I have to abstain from. My plan of eating is a way for me to eat that allows me to abstain from those things. So I have to abstain, and I need a plan that supports abstaining from those things. My grandson is allergic to eggs and sesame. But there's no question about whether he's going to eat eggs and sesame. They don't try to do it. You know what I mean? Because it's clear he's going to need an EpiPen, right? But yet, for some reason, with this illness, isn't it funny? We'll still go back and try. That's powerless. That's powerlessness. So I'm just so grateful to be here. I'm grateful to be abstinent today and in a position to be able to share my experience, strength, and hope. And I hope that in some way I inspired someone here. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Haya.